Hi, this is Lori Moylov. I'm your host of Limitless, which is all about unlimited possibilities of creativity. And I have amazing Phil Perrier here with me to talk about creativity. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a scoop about Phil. Phil is a stand-up comedian, also amazing writer. He's written for some of the funniest people you may know, like Jay Leno, Arsenio, Craig Ferguson, David Letterman. So how amazing. And I just want to talk about a little bit more about Phil. Can you give a scoop on like maybe something that our listeners don't know that they can't find on Google?
Yeah, well, I've got a documentary film called One-Nighters, which I shot actually a few years ago. It was myself and another comic doing a tour of the Pacific Northwest, just this like 8,000 mile tour where we did 30 gigs and like 32 nights or something. And then throughout the narrative, and also it's just like beautiful, you know, the Grand Tetons and all these beautiful places. And then sometimes it's like ice road truckers. I mean, we're driving in really treacherous conditions. And then throughout the movie, it's about an hour and a half long, I interview comics like Jay Leno and Billy Gardell and Judy Tenuta and all these great comics talking about their, you know, their road experiences. So One-Nighters, and I'm currently working on getting it distributed. So it should be out in the next, you know, God willing, you know, few weeks or months.
Oh, that's exciting. I'm so excited to see that. Like, and how cool is that? Like, what it's like being on the road as a comic and all that, giving the inside scoop.
My one, and it's on the low end of the pay spectrum. The, the tagline in the trailer is "Welcome to the small time." Cause we're doing, you know, bar, you know, it's like we're in Montana and we're in Oregon and Washington working bars and hotel lounges. And, you know, they're the kind of gigs that every, you know, comic, you know, Jay Leno started. You have to go, you know, first you have open mics, then you have gigs like this, then you have full week clubs. So, you know, it's a level that every comic has to go through. And, you know, when you go through that, you know, kind of baptism of fire, you've developed an act. And if you can, you know, if you can make people put down their pool cues and, you know, turn away from the video game, you're doing something, you know.
Please welcome stand-up comedian Phil Perrier.
All right. That's my time. Thank you. Drive safely. God bless.
Right. That's so true. I feel like attention spans have kind of shifted. I know, like with TikTok, it's now 15 seconds. If you can't capture something in 15 seconds, I don't know. Like we're just like,
yeah, the national attention span is getting, we're right. We're like, right. Fruit flies and Americans are like right about neck and neck with our attention span.
So I guess like attention span, all that, and creativity and writing, what is like your creative space? Like, where do you go? Like when you're writing these jokes, like, and pitching them to Jay Leno or Arsenio or, you know, whomever, where do you, and even for your own set, like, where do you go? Do you go to a
Yeah, well, for my, you know, for my own act, I mean, I don't do a lot of topical in my own act. So just living my life and just all the, you know, traffic and what happens at the gym and what happens at the store or the airport or the bank, you know, just always writing and always just, you know, being observant for, you know, for my own act or, you know, most comics, but for writing topical, like get news stuff, it's, but you know, you're looking at the websites, you're looking at TMZ and New York Post and LA Times and, you know, and seeing what's going on in the news and then writing jokes about it immediately. So then boom, you know, Arsenio or Jay Leno's on stage that night talking about, you know, whatever's like right now, you know, it would be, I don't know, Afghanistan or, you know, whatever, or, you know, abortion in Texas or, you know, the kind of like, I've been watching Stephen Colbert and he's really, I think, you know, in the post Jay Leno, David Letterman era, the best late night monologue to me, and I like Jimmy Kimmel and Fallon, but I really think Colbert is kind of, you know, doing the smartest, funniest late night monologue of anybody right now.
So like, how would, if someone wanted to get in that space, like how would they, like, is there research involved? What kind of goes into it? Like when you're starting and getting those ideas and crafting those jokes?
Well, you know, what I did was I approached Jay Leno at a bike rally in Atlanta. This is before I moved to LA, and told him I wanted to write for him. And back then, a lot of these guys would take freelance faxed submissions. Wow. And pay. Back then it was like $50 a joke. Then it became $75 a joke. And then somebody sued Conan O'Brien a few years ago. Like, you know, he used my joke and didn't pay me, which is, I mean,
wow.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like I would call Jay sometimes and pitch an idea. And he said, you know, you're like the sixth person today to come. Comedy writers think alike. And there are only so many, you know, you hear a headline. There are only so many places you can go with it. So the idea that somebody would sue, and I like, if you get stiffed for one joke, I don't, you know, you tell your lawyer, well, we're going to sue Conan for $9 million because he stiffed me for 75. That doesn't, I don't know. But what my point is, it queered the entire, now I don't think any late night shows take freelance submissions anymore because they're afraid of getting sued. Yeah, I know. So one douchebag, pardon my French.
Yeah, it's okay. We're limitless here. We're limitless.
All right, good.
Any language.
All right.
But man, that seems like that put a jam. But so you kind of had a fluke. You faxed in a joke. Is that kind of how you got the
Well, joke? I would say, you know, like when I first started, I would, you know, I'd get the USA Today, which was kind of the paper that had all, it was the easiest paper to write jokes from. And I would write like, you know, 15 to 20 jokes a day, send them off to Jay. And I mean, I was really lucky if one of them got on. And I had weeks where, I mean, I would have periods where 2 or 3 weeks would go by and he used nothing. And then he might use 3 jokes in one night, you know, so it was streaky. But I mean, if, you know, if he didn't use a joke of mine for a week or two, I was in a bad, you know, it really, it gnawed at my soul, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Some days there'd be like Bill Clinton Lewinsky or something, you know, there'd be a story that you really sank your teeth into and sent him like a whole little run of jokes. And then he'd go up and do nothing. He'd do one joke about that topic and it was a lousy joke by somebody else. And you're like, what the hell, you know?
Yeah, man. So, you know, I guess like one question I have as a comedian is like, I guess developing that thick skin and testing out, like, how do you test out your jokes? Like, do you
don't, I mean, that's the thing, like with monologue stuff. I mean, if you're doing it in your own stand-up act, then you just do it in front of an audience. And, you know, I mean, if you're going to do a new joke, you don't open with it, you don't close with it. You kind of stick it somewhere in the middle and try to make it seem like it's not a new, you don't go, okay, here's a new joke, get ready not to laugh. You know, you got to kind of, you know, you be slick about it and just throw it in there and hope it does okay. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with monologue stuff, you just write to the best of your ability. And, you know, the host and the head writers, they pick what they think is strongest. And then they go out there and some of it kills and some of it goes so flat. You're like, how the hell, you know, how did that vetting process allow that joke through? But, you know, until you put it in front of an audience, that's the one thing about comedy, you know, until you put it in front of people, human beings that laugh or don't laugh, you don't know. Yeah. You never know, you know?
So has there ever been a time and space where you were like, you're like, this is the joke. This is going to be so funny and go so well. And then it just like tanked
more often it just didn't get used, you know what I mean? I was like, I was, you know, I'd send Jay a joke that was like, my God, that's a great joke, and he wouldn't use it. I was like, and you know, I mean, honestly,
give me an example of a joke that
I can't really think of anything, but
I was like,
because this is all just, it's like news, you know, it's jokes about Bill Clinton or jokes about Obama or whatever. You know, but there, I sent a couple of bitchy comments. One time I sent, at the end of my submission, I said something like, Jay, did you throw last night's monologue for the insurance money? And he did not use any of my jokes for like 3 years after. So,
oh man,
you know, he's got feelings, you know? And
yeah.
He doesn't
we but all that, do,
that's
right?
The thing though, you know, you can't take it too personally. And there were times when I took it too personally and I said and did stupid things that hurt, you know, that I paid for, you know. Never with Arsenio, thank God. But I mean, he, you know, he was paying me great. I mean, that was like a sweet gig, you know.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that's kind of how we met, like originally working together on Arsenio. And I definitely find that such a treat. Like Arsenio's just a funny, great guy. And
just,
man,
yeah,
I had so much,
guy.
So many great memories. One vivid memory with me and you would be the Prince show.
Yes.
You know, I got to, for me, I think the highlight not only was seeing Prince, but then I got to ride the scooter you had, and that had some torque. I gotta say, it had some torque.
I think the Prince show, I mean, that was like the high watermark of that whole show.
Yeah.
And he was on for like 3 hours, and he had Prince do it. That was, and also that was kind of Arsenio's magic, aside from just being funny and incredibly talented. he could talk people. You know, he had Bill Clinton doing two songs on the show back in the, you know, he was so charming that he could get like a guy like Prince or a Bill Clinton to do all sorts of things that most talk show, I mean, they would be in and out in 5 minutes and you'd be glad to have them. But he had Prince for like 3 hours. I mean, he had, you know,
I know
he had him doing all sorts of stuff.
That was like a crazy show. Like that was probably, I would say, one of the highlights for everyone that worked on Arsenio.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Including myself, I would say that was just such a treat, you know?
Yeah. And I was blown away by just how great a guitar player Prince was. I was like, good God, I had no idea. Right?
Yeah. And seeing it up like up close, I mean, wow. I just was like, okay, that blew my mind. I guess like now with creativity, finding the space, like even Prince is totally, I would say, just creative. For a writer and whatnot, what is some tips you can give to some of those that are tuning in, how to kind of shift your mind and get creative? What are some tips that
you have? Well, I think one thing, you know, I've heard a lot, and I'm not the only one, but right in the morning, you know, when your mind is still kind of soft and mushy and you're not completely awake, because I always found like writing jokes, and I know people that write music and all sorts of writing, you know, when you first get up, the first 2 or 3 hours is like probably going to be your peak. And, you know, people are different. Some people write late at night, but my first few hours, you know, on the, like even when I was writing for Arsenio or writing for Leno, morning is the best time to do it. So take advantage of your brain's pliable nature in the morning, you know, and figure out what, and you know, whatever works for you, but figure out when you're most creative, when you want to do it, you know, when you really feel like it's the right time to do it. Because if it feels like drudgery, you're doing something wrong, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm definitely in the same scope too. I feel my creativity sparks mainly in the morning. I agree, like that mushy brain, and you're just not all you're not
all impacted. The chatter is it's not
the
there
chatter
yet.
Isn't like coming at you, you know, and that's why I think also sometimes social media is a little challenging, because you have the chatter of all these messages and likes and comments to keep attuned to. So I guess, like, is there any advice for any writer like such as yourself on what to do in all that?
Well, I would also like recommend like headphones, because I remember there were times when I was writing for Arsenio and there were people so loud out in the hall. I'm trying to write jokes, you know, and to write a joke, I mean, there's, you know, the setup is kind of easy, but then your mind has to create a connection. You know, there's a little bit of a creative spark that has to happen. And when you hear somebody, rah, 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 so, you know, headphone, you know, just try to find a quiet space inside your head, you know, and stay there and get the job done.
So,
and also just do it. You know, don't think, oh, I'm not feeling it today. You know, sit down at a certain time every day or 5 or 6 days a week and just do it. And if one day it sucks, you know, you're still better off than not doing it, you know?
Yeah. I feel like that's the interesting thing with creativity, is it's like, it's messy. It's not clear cut. Like you could have an idea in like this space and then it just totally doesn't even go to that.
Space. Like, or maybe like a lot of the time, like you might be writing a song or something, and the original idea is not even included in the final product, but it got you going, you know, it got the process started.
Yeah. Has that happened to you, like on a joke?
All the time.
Like maybe you started a joke and then it ended up totally.
Yeah. All the time. Yeah. I mean, and I wrote, you know, newspaper columns and stuff, and I'd be, oh, I got to say this. And then in the finished product, the thing I had to say is not even there anymore. That's why they say like writing is killing your children, you know, because you come up with these great ideas. Then you look at the final product and you're like, you know, I got to get rid of that, because that just doesn't flow. It doesn't make sense there, you know?
Yeah, that's a real interesting analogy about killing your children.
It's because it's heartbreaking. You know, sometimes like, God, I wrote this whole thing to get this one line in there, and now the one line doesn't fit anymore. But hey, you know.
Yeah, and then you have to just ink it out. And wow. I mean, I think like that's the thing, is it kind of is an emotional experience, up and down experience when you're creating, because like, okay, you at the end have to, maybe the thing that you were so attached to, then you have to kill that. And I'm wondering, like, when you're in that space, how do you process that? How do you just say, okay, I have to do what's best for the joke, or
whatever, like if you're writing a song or whatever you're writing, if you know, it's all about making that as good as it can be and as clear and as concise and say what you want to say. and you cut away all the fat. And sometimes the fat is the first thing you wanted to say or the thing you wanted to say the most, but you know, you got to let it go and just realize that's just the creative process, you know?
In the current climate with comedy, laughter, and I would say maybe like, just like you said, even now someone can't submit like a monologue or something to Jay Leno with lawsuits or whatnot and all that. How can a comedy writer, maybe who's just starting out, like, I mean, think about
it. I don't know.
What would be the best way, like even to get on your radar? Maybe there's a writer that wants to, you know, workshop their
ideas. Probably get a relationship with a comic, you know, and who's somebody you like their work and you want to write for them, you know, and get in touch with them and say, you know, I want to write for you and just take it from there. And then like when I first hooked up with Arsenio, he wasn't even on TV.
Yeah.
Jay Leno, because you know, I'd been badgering because I'd been writing for Leno for a long time as a freelancer. And I would go to tapings and go, Jake, you know, give me a job for the love of God. And he's like, well, yeah, I mean, he was always like, yeah, there's no turnover, which, yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of turnover. But so finally one day he called me up and he said, and any day, you know, Jay calls you on, I mean, it didn't happen that often. When it did, it was like, I take
yes?
that call.
Hello?
So, okay, Jay, I'm sorry, my mom's in the other line. I got it. But, you know, so he called and said, would you write jokes for Arsenio Hall? And I was like, yeah, I love Arsenio Hall. So I met with Arsenio at the P.F. Chang's in Northridge. And we had a lovely, I mean, like a 3-hour lunch. And I just asked him a million questions and we really hit it off. And then I wrote a bunch of jokes for his appearance on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Mm-hmm. And then we just stayed in touch. And then like 2 years later, you know, he won the Celebrity Apprentice with, oh, here, I got a visual. You got a visual aid.
Let's see the visual aid.
He won the Celebrity Apprentice, hosted by a certain orange man.
It looks like a troll.
Visual aid. And then Les Moonves, who was the head of CBS, said, all right, we're gonna give you a shot. And so he got that show that we had the privilege of working on.
Wow.
And I emailed him as soon as I heard about it. I was here in Atlanta visiting my mom because I live in LA. And I sent him an email. I want to be on your writing staff. You know, I want to be very specific, I want to be part of the team. I want to help you. I want to be on your writing staff. And then I was on his writing staff. You know, he was like, I was one of the first people because I've been writing jokes for him for the past couple of years and, you know, for all of his gigs and whatever TV appearances. And he had other, you know, really good writers. But I mean, I was at the right place at the right time. So if you establish, you know, a relationship.
So it's P.F. Chang's. You got to take your friend comedian to P.F. Chang's. That's the answer. Right?
Well, and you know, he told a story.
What did he get? Orange chicken?
I forget, but it was good. The food was really good. And he had a Mai Tai, and I was not drinking because I had to drive back to Van Nuys, but I think he lived near. But he said that years ago he was eating at a P.F. Chang and there was like a nail or a screw in his boot.
No.
Yeah, and he broke a tooth and he talked to the manager and he got a lifetime free. So I didn't realize that at the time.
I need to ask Arsenio to take me to P.F. Chang's.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, so we had this fantastic meal, which apparently was free, you know.
That's crazy. Oh my God.
I
feel bad that he got, you know, a foreign object. I mean,
and he wouldn't make that up. He's a man of tremendous integrity. So if he said he bit into a nut or a bolt, by God, he bit into a nut or a bolt, you know?
Oh my gosh. That's just,
you say no MSG, but if you don't say hold the screws, you know,
hold the screws. Yeah. That's scary to me. Wow. I feel like it's really about relationships, right? And the creativity of keeping connected and relationships. How have you like kind of stayed creative in keeping connected with different folks you've worked with? And
you know, honestly, I mean, in my case, like I wrote freelance for Jay Leno for a long time. He retired. I wrote freelance for David Letterman. He retired. Mm-hmm. Arsenio is not retired. But yeah, I need to hook up with some young. That's why I was hoping like some talk show would start in Atlanta and I could, you know, at least freelance or get my foot in the door somehow. But I mean, I would move back to LA in a heartbeat if I got a writing job at those prices, you know.
I feel like it's definitely possible. With the future, you know, who knows? I feel like everything's very digital these days. And even like, even with music, it's all streaming. So I feel like finding creative ways to still make people laugh, I feel is the best way. And what better way? We're just on Zoom, you know. So segueing, I'm going to give you some time to just do what you do best, which is making those laugh and getting creative. So I don't know. I'm giving the floor to you just to be creative.
Well, I tell you, I don't, you know, laughter, it's not really.
Unless that's putting you on the spot, up to you.
No, that's cool. But I was just going to say that because you were mentioning right before we started, you were talking about Norm MacDonald.
Yeah. And Sarah Silverman. I want to dedicate this to Norm because, like, Bill, you're my first guest, and I'm just so thrilled to have you. And I feel like, Norm was such a great guy, and I had the honor to work with him. And we worked on a TBS pilot.
Like, what was he like to work with?
Man, he was just such a sweetheart. Like, he was so kind. And it was like, even when we were busy, he'd make time. He invited everyone. Like, we would all go and have lunch together. It was just, wow. I would say I was so rooting for that pilot to take off because I was like, we were.
Was it like a sitcom or what?
The show was called Norm MacDonald is Trending, and he would cover sports in a comic way. And it was just, it was an amazing pilot.
Kind of like The Soup, kind of?
Yeah.
So he's like, there's a screen behind him, and he's commenting on the stuff going on in the sporting events.
Yes, yeah. And
he'd be great at that, wouldn't he?
I know. And I guess, you know, it's always, as you know, executives, different.
What was this going to be shopped around, or was there one particular network they were trying to get
it
on?
It was an internal TBS, TNT thing. So it didn't take off, but I was just so thankful that I had the chance to work with Norm because I was working the award circuit. I used to work at Jesse Collins, and they do a lot of the award show stuff. Actually, they're, I think, Emmys. Jesse's working on the Emmys, I think, this weekend. I was in that circuit of working on award shows, and this was like something new and different, and Norm and the show gave me a chance, and I was like, wow, you know. And I think that's the thing with creativity, is you kind of have to allow yourself to be given the chance in any scope. I mean, for me, that was in production finance, and I had to get creative too. So I feel like creativity and being limitless, there's endless possibilities, right?
You see his last comedy special?
No, I gotta see it.
Yeah, it was great.
He
was
talking about it.
I saw it on, I think, Netflix. It was about 6 months ago it came out. And one of the funniest things that he was talking about was, okay, you ever heard of autoerotic asphyxiation where people hang? I think, Anthony Bourdain did it. Michael Hutchins of NXS. You hang yourself if you're a man. I guess women don't do it, or
I don't know anything about this. So
all right, well, great. This is perfect.
This
so
is
you hang yourself. I mean, you're trying to kill yourself.
Oh gosh,
you're having some problems, and while you do it, you masturbate. And this is according to Norm. If you masturbate while you're dying of asphyxiation, your orgasm is 3 times more intense.
Wow.
So, what? And then Norm was talking about.
I don't know if our viewers and listeners should do this.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like you really want an intense orgasm that much. But what Norm was talking about after explaining that was that, you know, it's bad because then at the funeral, everybody, you know, people are making gestures. Everybody's, you know, that's the last thing everybody thinks about you is, you know, you're found with your pants around your ankles and your goodies in your hand, and it's just not a good thing to do to your family or your friends.
Yeah. True. So, yeah.
I'd like to say a cautionary tale. Kids, don't do that.
Yeah, please. No, this is
the masturbating part's okay, but keep the rope around your neck. No, no.
Yeah, don't no ropes, no ropes.
No ropes, no.
Yeah, wow. I didn't even see that special, so wow, I'm going to have to watch Norm.
Well, I just kind of, you know, I kind of tipped the ending of that for you, but he's so brilliant. He was.
Yeah.
And also, you're talking about Sarah Silverman. One of the things about Norm was, you know, in this modern era of, you know, cancel culture and, you know, people just incredibly persnickety, he was one of the brave people. I think Dave Chappelle is the same way. Mm-hmm. And I think Sarah Silverman, you know, they're just, sure. they're going to say what they're going to say and you can kiss their ass. You know, they're not going to, you're not going to cancel don't them. You're not going to, they don't care. You know, that's what comedy is all about that. You know, we're making yeah. fun of stuff. We don't hate those things. We're not trying to destroy anything. You know, and if you can't satirize things, then that's not freedom of speech. I mean, that's a huge thing yeah. to take away, you know.
I feel like that's the thing that's interesting, and that's kind of what I wanted to explore with you on creativity is because the cancel culture and what the landscape is like, I feel that some comedians maybe hold back and they might have a hilarious oh. joke yeah. and it's like, well, I don't know if this is going to hit, yeah. you know, whatever mark and or whatever. And maybe it is completely offensive and it could go totally sour, but I feel like comedians now hold back a little bit because of it. Do you
yeah,
feel
no, it's poison. It's just, yeah, it is the absolute antithesis of the creative process to like, I better not say, ooh, but I mean, can you imagine George Carlin or Richard Pryor trying to bite their tongue? I mean, right? And the thing is, it's going to mess up, you know, everything if you're trying to hold back and you're trying to edit yourself, everything you're doing is going to be a little bit off and it's going to, you know, it's going to smell bad. It's going to feel bad. It's you got into comedy to speak from the mountaintop and just express what's in your heart and to not be able to do that because people are going to tweet that you're a racist or you're a sexist or you're a homophobe. Wow.
Yeah. I find it interesting because it's we're in a weird landscape. It's like, okay, you can speak, but wait, you can't speak. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's a conflict and everyone's having this conflict because it's like, I could say something and then it's like, someone will be offended by it. And I just feel like—
Well, and I don't even think they're really offended by it. I mean, I think it's fake outrage. You know, Bill Maher has called it fake outrage where, you know, somebody hears, ooh, that could be racist or that could be gay bashing or whatever. You know, it's not a black person or even a gay person. It's just mm-hmm. another white person who's going to skewer you because you said something that they think might, you know, it's like a gotcha game. And I just, you know, ugh.
Yeah,
I don't like it. I don't like it.
I'm in the same boat. I feel like, you know, that's the thing is we being able to have discussions and conversations and maybe something is offensive, but someone can explore that and learn, you know.
Now, have you ever seen Zach Galifianakis's show Between Two Ferns?
I know. I feel like I'm near.
I see you've got what kind of what is that?
A uniform. I'm in a uniform.
That's one fern.
Limitless. We're unit.
You're like in front of one fern.
In front of one fern. Limitless, right?
Limitless, absolutely.
Yeah, you know what? You just need one fern. I think
that's all you need. Yeah, that's a good start. That's a starter. It's a starter fern.
Yeah, it's a starter fern. Wait till we get the whole farm of ferns, right? This is just planting the seed, right? Phil, you're just the one planting the seed for Limitless. Just—
oh, you know, okay. Now, I know you're in LA, but you said you might be able to harvest some. I'll tell you what, you know who lives in Phoenix? Alice Cooper. You know who that is? The rocker?
No.
Oh, you've never heard of Alice?
Actually, I do know someone who lives.
Charles Barkley lives in that area.
You know,
the basketball player.
Yes,
I think Wayne Gretzky and his daughter. There's a lot of people in the Phoenix. Next time you're back in the Phoenix area, I think you could harvest some amazing guests. You know, from that area.
Yeah, and
you could do a Zoom.
Thinking about it, I do know someone. Stevie Nicks' brother lives in Arizona too. Yeah, I actually, it's ironic. I've been to his house because a friend of mine, when I in between gigs, I would do touring photography, and we ended up at his house because he.
What does he do?
Robert, huh?
What does Stevie Nicks' brother do?
He just chills with all these rockers. That's really what he does.
I mean, does he sponge off his sister?
He does yacht races and whatnot too. And that's funny that, yeah, the yacht races were something interesting. I did.
You gotta be rich to do yacht races. You know, that's not really like a Joe Sixpack kind.
No.
It's not like racquetball or, you know, that's an expensive sport.
I was trying to do some photography and on a boat and taking pictures of these yachts, but what people don't tell you is that you're trying to take the picture, but you're just like, okay, I can't, like, I focus is hard because you're just yeah. I feel like that's comedy too, because you never know what's going to come at you as stand up, right? When you're doing stand up, you never know. How have you handled hecklers? What do you?
I've had heckling. You're doing your set. I've seen fist fights. I mean, hecklers, you know, that's the least of your worries. I mean, I've seen just one time I was doing a gig in Reno, Nevada, and I was the middle act. You know, there's like an opener, a middle, and a headliner, and I was the middle guy. And there was a couple sitting like right up front, and the guy just never laughed, and he looked kind of uptight. And then they just got up and left. And the MC, after I got done, the MC said, "Did you see what was going on there?" Like, what? He said, "That girl was giving that guy a hand job during your set."
What?
I was like, yeah. I was like, no, I didn't know it. But I mean, why would you even want to do it? Wouldn't that be like the worst, least romantic? I don't know. Maybe they got turned on by public, or, but you know, I just thought, no, don't do that.
Yeah. Maybe after he left, he was just laughing so much. He was holding it in.
No, he looked, he looked like a guy trying to concentrate. Here I'm telling jokes, and he looked like, you know,
concentrate.
Stop talking. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So yeah, I mean, I've had just weird things happen when I was on stage, but yeah, hecklers are the least. I think most comics, it's like they say children would rather be beaten than ignored. Mm. For most comics, hecklers aren't a terrible show. A terrible show would be when the people are just like talking, you know, they're just not paying attention. They're breaking the discussion groups. That happens sometimes. But usually, if you're a good comic, you know, usually has enough of the audience, you know, under your spell to not have that happen. But
how do you capture, like, how do you keep the momentum and that energy going?
You got to start strong. You got to close strong, and you got to get, I'd say if you're a stand-up, you got to get at least a couple laughs, like a couple, you know, they say laughs per minute. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have like some 3 minute long joke. I mean, you got to have a laugh every 30 seconds or so to really keep them on your side.
Wow.
Just so they trust you, you know, they can just go with you. And then they get in the rhythm and the flow, and they want to keep laughing. I mean, I've been in a club before where I've laughed at a joke where I didn't even hear the punchline, but I laughed at the last, you know what I mean? You're just in the rhythm of laughing. You're enjoying it. It's like yoga or something. You're like, I'm going to keep laughing until this guy's done, you know?
That's funny. I love that. It's like laughter yoga. You know?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I guess it's like just getting in the flow and that rhythm.
Yeah. And they like you, and they trust you, and they're like, I'm just going to keep laughing.
It's all that. It's getting in that flow and rhythm and finding the right space. And I think you were saying, like, I would say the takeaway is like morning time is a great time for getting creative, finding a good headset if you're in a space that maybe doesn't allow you to get creative.
Yeah.
I guess what are some other like tips that you'd have to like keep sparking creativity?
You said, well, I'll tell you one thing, like, you know, people talk about, you know, Hemingway drank a lot, and F. Scott Fitzgerald, all these writers. I don't think I ever wrote successfully with, you know, drinking at all. So I would not recommend drugs or alcohol. Now, I experiment a little with your herbal situations, and I found that works for my creative process. But I mean, I would say learn how to do it straight, and then, you know, go from there. But yeah, I really think, you know, maybe coffee in the morning, but you know, just be sober, be aware, be in the moment, and trust your instincts.
Woo. All right, great to be here. Hope you all enjoy my show. If not, just look at this as a bad episode of House. Now, in case you're wondering why I've got the cane and the slight limp, a while back I turned 40. And it all went straight to hell. No, really, this is actually an insurance scam. Just play along.
Maybe it's just me, but I was like, I don't know that many people that have kind of flipped it into a comic situation. I was even watching your set that you did on Arsenio, and I was like, this is hilarious. You're like, I'm 40 years old, and you came on, and, you know, I was just laughing every 30 seconds, like you said, so...
man, that was sweet. And, you know, that was like, because, you know, usually if a comic's going to go on a show, there's a whole vetting process and, you know, auditions. And I was just sitting there one day at the rehearsal in my scooter, and Arsenio walked over and he said, come up with like 3 minutes of really tight shit. I'm going to put you on the show. I was like, yes, sir. And that was it. I mean, there were no meetings. I emailed him a few days before that. I said, like, do you want me to show you my set? And he didn't even email me back, which just told me just
do it.
Do my stuff and make sure it's funny. Because, at that point, I've been doing comedy for a long time. And he gave me, I think it was like 4 minutes. And I thought, if I can't do four good minutes, if I can't, shrink my, condense, get 4 good minutes, then to hell with me, so.
Yeah.
I rehearsed that same set. I was like, while I was driving to work or driving home, I would do that same four, with the clock on my car dash. So I knew I had it down just verbatim. And so I knew,
So that process, how many days, so this 4 minute set and how many days,
I had months. I had two or three months to rehearse it. So yeah, it was seamless.
I think that's the thing is just for that short amount of time, how much energy and
goes
into it. I think,
I worked at that show. If I went, not great, if that was clunky, I had to face every, It's like,
have to face the writers.
I'd have to kill myself. I would have to take a freaking Harry Carroll,
Yeah.
Because it's like if I was doing somebody else's show and I suck, so what? They'll never see me again. But if I'm, I'm doing my show where I work here every freaking day, I cannot disgrace my. And Arsenio stuck his neck out for me. I mean, I had to bring it. There was absolutely no.
You had a lot on the line, right?
Everything on. But that was cool. That was fun, though.
Yeah.
Because that made me think back when I first started doing open mics. I was scared. I was way more scared the first time I went on to do an open mic than I was to go on in front of millions of people on the Arsenio show, because I've been doing it for decades.
Yeah.
So it was fun to feel that fear, because that's what it's all about. That adrenaline rush of walking out on a stage. It's like, you're on the trapeze with no net, you're just, you're only as good as your last joke. And that's, I think comics are all addicted to that adrenaline rush, And my mom, she said to me, and God, she passed away 3 years ago, but she said, Phil, why don't you just go out there and wing it? I was like, no. Like, Mom, I love you. I know you mean well, I think, but no way. I am going to rehearse. And I was already, rehearsing. So I was like, I got it. I'm on it. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know where she was coming from.
Your mom's so cute. Just wing it. Yeah.
Horrible. That is
everything's on the line. You're like, everything's on the line. Oh my gosh.
That's the worst advice. But I'm sure she didn't want me to go out there and disgrace myself.
Yeah, I think
because if you go out and just wing it, you might just go out there and just freeze up and just not say anything, and then.
Yeah, I feel like that's the thing is in any performance landscape, if you wing it, that's not good. But then also, I think if you're coming from a comfortable approach, it's better that way.
Yeah, give yourself some room to wing it in the moment. But have a
have a format and
game. Yes, absolutely. Have a blueprint and it's pretty much stick to it. But yeah, the idea is going out there and winging it from start to finish. That would never, even when I first started doing open mics. I had a set list and I had been rehearsing in my bathroom mirror. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for. Prepare, preparation. Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. That is true. I totally agree. It's like being prepared because once you're in that space, you're ready, then it's like, okay, you're so prepared that you can wing it. I guess it feels like you're winging it because anyway, you're so prepared.
You're confident. If you step off the script, you can step right back on. Yeah. You're okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you go out there and you're just gonna wing it, it's like, well, where do I start? What
Where do I end? What do I do? Yeah.
Yeah. Where do I end? It's like no. Mm-hmm.
So I guess limitless and creativity and closing. What would you like? What are three top things that you can give to those that are listening, to stay in the creative space and to expand?
Okay, I would say number one, do what you love. Mm-hmm. Do what you love. Trust your instincts, and just do it to the best of your ability. And don't, if you keep loving it, keep doing it. Don't ever give up. Don't let a, you know, a pissy tweet or you know, somebody says something bad about you on Facebook. I mean, it's much harder to build something than it is to tear something down. So realize that if, you know, if you're going to write a song or a book or make a movie, that's hard to do. And it's easy to say you suck. So,
right.
You know, let that, don't, you know, don't read too many of your own comments. Like I just saw Dave Chappelle was on Joe Rogan's podcast and he'd been on once before and they were talking about how they were looking at the comments and just oh, he's fat and he's old. You know, it's like, just don't read the comments. Don't read too many comments, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're not going to be good.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, we're in this culture of comments and people want to respond, but it's like, wow, it's not as uplifting as you'd hope. Like, no. I don't know, when I comment, I try to lift up people's
feelings. Yeah.
Because I know, like, just like you said, it's very hard to build the mountain. Yeah. And so easy to tear it down, right?
Yeah.
So, that's the thing that's so interesting, because with creativity, it's kind of fragile and it's delicate. And yes. So you want to give it the right space and time to breathe so that it can be limitless, because there's limitless possibilities. Like, for example, your doc and, you know, all the comedy writing that you've been doing and continue to do, you know, there's so many opportunities. And I think, like, that's the gift, is us just showing up with who we are and what we love and enjoy doing, you know. And so that's what closes out Limitless.
Well,
right?
well said Lori.
We are limitless, and you know, creativity is in everyone, and I hope to inspire others and share so many amazing stories. And Phil, thank you so much
thanks for having me, Lori. You look fantastic out. By the way, you've gotten younger in the past 7 years.
Amazing. And I want to say thank you so much, Phil. And
my pleasure.
I just learned so much about you, had definitely some laughs, and I just want to dedicate today to Norm.
Okay, I want to be on your 1000th show. Yes, Norm McDonald.
1000, yes. And okay, so episode 1000 is for you. I'm having that placeholder. We'll get even more creative, right?
You bet.
Well, I can't wait. Thank you so much, Phil. It was good seeing you.